All right, hey, what's happening, folks? We're going to take a time out from the terrible doom and gloom headlines to talk about what you do in the event of doom and gloom getting much worse. What I'm talking about is some scenario plays out that leaves us in an emergency situation. Now, we always kind of smugly think of like, it'll never happen here. And that's the fallacy of inductive reasoning. We could never imagine a Great Depression happening, like in the 1920s, the Roaring Twenties, a time of peak economic prosperity, and then crash in 1929 into the Great Depression. It could never happen. A civil war could never happen until it does. A power grid failure could never happen until it does. A world war could never happen until it does, and then it does again. And so the unthinkable is right around the corner, and we as protector providers need to make sure that we have hedged ourselves against things that could happen in the future, whether it's a power grid failing or supply chain leaving grocery stores empty, whether it's a world war, a civil war, riots in the streets. We've seen all of this stuff before. It could happen again. It will happen again. It's a matter of time. Natural disasters happen all the time. Right now, interestingly enough, I didn't plan on sharing this, but in Vegas, as of yesterday, there were 100-mile-an-hour winds sweeping through, leaving thousands of people without power. It's not a major long-lasting catastrophe. However, it just is enough of a blip on the radar to remind us to make sure that we've taken proper precautions. What we'll do in this episode today is I'm going to give myself a $4,000 budget to kind of start from zero, and I'm going to give you the constraints, and we will go through that thought experiment to say, hey, what is some basics I should be getting, and what are some basics that I should be thinking about? So this really forced me to really prioritize. I had to make decisions. There's a lot I wanted to do, but on a budget, you can't just do everything. And so you had to eliminate a lot. But we'll have a great conversation. I think you'll be edified by it. I was actually edified just in the doing of it. So it all starts now. John Lovell Show. Here we go. All right, guys, so I am framing in our scenario with a couple givens. One, I am in suburbia. In this scenario, I'm living in a neighborhood, not inside a major city, living in an apartment, and I'm not on some like off-grid homestead or something like that. So I'm trying to draw a line to that would just to say of like, hey, man, I'm not in an ideal situation. I'm not in the worst situation. Living in a neighborhood, I'm in suburbia. That being said, you're going to have some stuff already available to you that most houses are going to have. You're going to have things like lighters, a fuel tank. You'll have knives, flashlights, sleeping bags, and backpacks. You're going to have some basic drugs around the house, ibuprofen and Benadryl. You're going to have some limited tools in the garage as well. And so I'm trying to frame in of like, what does just kind of an average suburbia household already have? Also, as I'm just kind of framing this out, I'd love to be able to talk about like, well, hey man, develop some good skills. However, that's outside of the idea of this segment. It's more about if something was about to happen, what are some physical assets that I could get now and I could work on my knowledge base and my skills a little bit later? Really, the skills are more important than the actual stuff, and people seem to reverse that. They think you get the stuff and I'll be okay, and that's absolutely not true. Really, skills is wildly more important. With skills, you don't need as much stuff. Another thing that's kind of out of scope, but it's crucially important, is that you have community. And again, you're not going to go out and buy community. But I do want to have a discussion on kind of what that community looks like. You could have like 30 people in your network, but they're actually all classified as liabilities when it comes to survival, not actual assets. And so there's a different way to evaluate emergency human capital. And so we'll talk about that. Another framing piece is I'm going to assume I'm not bugging out anywhere. And a bug out, a lot of folks will just have a naive notion. You're going to like throw a bunch of kit in the car and you're going to go camp out in the woods for a few weeks. And it's just not a real good solution. A lot of times you're leaving all the physical assets that you have to rush out into the wilderness where you have really no security and resources. And you think that you're going to be able to just kind of live off the land in the woods, even though that's not actually, if you're honest, part of your skill set. You're leaving all the assets in your home and leaving those behind. A lot of times we think that the grass is always greener in a bug out, and that's only true if your bug out location truly has better assets than what you're leaving.
Like if you had a bunker in the ground, John, would that be a better one?
Yeah, if you had a bunker in the ground and it's got renewable energy and, plan for waste and food and water.
I do
water
not have
and,
that.
Yeah, then... Then don't just go live out in the woods out of a backpack. That's probably not best. The only time that you would want to do that is if actually had to, say you're stacked in on top of yourself inside a city, people are kicking in doors and you fear for your life. And so it's like, hey man, I need to get out of Dodge. Assets, screw that. If we don't get out, we're going to die. But people have a fallacy in thinking of like, I'll just throw everything in a bug out bag and just into the wilderness I go. I would be a fan of bugging out if your site B is like some homestead and you know somebody out there that's got land and they have invited you. Every time like a maintenance man comes out to my house, we just had somebody spraying for bugs. And he's like, hey, man, I know where I'm coming if the apocalypse happens. And I've had, hundreds of people say that, it's either it's an online joke or just friends or family, anybody that starts, realizing that you've been taking preparations, that's everyone's plan. I'm like, hey, man, I hate to spoil it for you, but I can't have 500 people living on my little property. That's not going to fly.
Sorry, Bugman. You're not on the list.
This is an invite only, and I want people who bring more assets than liabilities. They're folks of like, hey, you strengthen the chance of survival for me and my family. You're not a drain on us. You're a plus to us. And so you've got some amazing skill that's really important for a community. Or you come with amazing amounts of assets. You got 5 years of storage food. I'm like, hey, bring a U-Haul. I'll see you there. A final piece of framing is I tried to give myself a smaller budget, a $4,000 budget, so that I could do something meaningful with it. Also in this framing, I addressed it as if it was somebody that wasn't really already tuned up with security. There's a lot of folks that are wondering about preparation. And so I assumed that this person doesn't even have any guns. And I've done this two different ways. One is somebody who has no firearms and bullets. And then another way, you already have checked the block of some basic firearms and ammunition. And then I remix the bag of how I do it. And so I got pie charts and I got some data to look at and I've added it up. So I'll show all that to you. And you guys may come up with slightly different conclusions or radically different, but this will be all to help getting your brains going. This was a fun exercise for me. Ben, you're probably going to have some pushback as we go through some of this stuff.
We have compared notes just a little bit, and John and I have slightly different perspectives on some gear that will be illuminating, I think, as we dive into this.
Very good. We don't know how long this crisis would last, but the big idea in preparation is prepare for the worst kind of emergency for a very long time. And in doing so, with a longer trajectory, anything that's shorter and less intensity is going to be covered in it. So plan for a hardship that lasts a very long time. That's what I've done. So I'm going to start in the basics, and it's food, water, shelter, and security. And so those are kind of my four pillars. I started with food, and right off the rip, I went to get emergency storage food. This would cost me for 3 months of food just for myself would be $797. Guys, a shameless plug. I promise this episode is not plugging our own stuff of like I'm putting shin guns that aren't like the stuff that we actually use and sell. And so you just got to trust me. This isn't going to be an excuse to do some clever infomercial for our own merch. I'm not doing that. However, My Patriot Supply, I do have a relationship with them, but here it is anyway, through our link, it's mypatriotsupply.com/warriorpoet. They give the biggest discount that you can get through their site. And so it's a big discount down that gives you 3 months of storage food. And man, my basement's full of this. I was a customer long before I had any business relationship. So I put my money where my mouth was. Business relationship came after it. So you guys get some love. I get some love whenever you use that URL.
John, can I ask you a question?
Shoot.
Why Because why would you prefer long-term storage in that situation over just going to the grocery store and getting a couple hundred dollars worth of canned goods? You know what I'm saying?
Well, one is the storage food is going to last far longer. You're going to get some 25-year plus shelf life on this stuff. It's also not filled with a whole bunch of water. You get a canned beans or whatever. Yeah. It's a lot of water in there. Mm. And so that's a lot of weight, and it's actually not much food. And so pound for pound, you're getting wildly more food in a much smaller package that lasts a lot longer. So you have to get out of Dodge or something. You can carry significantly more food with something like the long-term food. It's way more food per dollar is the idea. Mm. And that's what matters. Of like, I think back to Ranger school, where we're a bunch of emaciated Army Rangers and we're counting calories. And when you're further in and you're just wasting away through not enough food, you're willing to eat food that you don't even like and make trades with other Rangers so that you can get a higher caloric intake. It's amazing how quickly we stopped caring about taste and how much calories mattered when our bodies were wasting away. It was all about calories. And so I see an overflowing dumpster, look around, and I dive in that thing, and I'm looking for any trash that's edible, and I'm eating it.
Raccoon
it doesn't matter
John,
anymore.
That's
absolutely
a picture
I dumpster dove. Yeah, multiple times. I'm proud of it. I needed that food. It was good.
Oh man!
It's a survival situation. I have been there, and man, calories matter a lot. I want as many calories as I can get in the lightest, smallest package that costs the least that still has nutritional value. So right off the rip, I spent $797 on my Patriot Supply. I also allotted myself a $300 budget for just a grocery store run. And so I'll get some food in there, maybe some canned goods if I want. Yeah, maybe some, put some toilet paper, aluminum foil, trash bags. That'd be a good deal. So I can just stock up on some of that miscellaneous stuff that I could be able to find at a grocery store. So far, I'm just dealing with food. Now, I'd want to make sure that my cooking ware was stuff that would last and stuff that could really handle being put in like a fireplace to be able to cook. So some of the stuff we have, if it's got like plastic handles and stuff, and really I would prefer cast iron everything. You know, you're able to put some kind of cast iron pot over a fireplace and fish that thing out, and all cooking can be done in that. And now you don't have to, worry about your electric getting cut off so you can't run your stove, or you're running out of natural gas or propane or something that's been cut off. I can just chop down trees and I can power it with abundant wood. So
I guess I suppose that if you haven't taken the time to get a grill, this would, maybe getting a grill might be a good idea. I mean, because I have everything that we cook with at my house is electric. And if the grid goes down, that's all of our cooking.
And would your plan be to do propane then?
I have a grill outside that has two small propane tanks that would probably, with regular use, be done in under a month maybe even 3 weeks.
And that's fine. And so you can just kind of have a few of those propane tanks available to you, but I guess those will be some $70 a piece or something like that.
Yeah, those aren't cheap.
And so you just have to allot that in. Instead, what I did is I put like one of those smaller camp stoves, something that would be a little bit more portable, and then a bunch of those butane tanks. And so I allotted myself in the next item, $140 for a camp stove with a ton of fuel. I liked it being smaller instead of this big grill that I have to fill up of like a lot of, you got to heat that whole thing. And that's a lot of wasted fuel if you're trying to be real scarce. Say that you're just trying to heat up water. Well, I want one eye and I want a tea kettle. The tea kettle, because it's enclosed, is going to bring water to a boil with far less energy. And so I like the idea. I can make propane or butane go far longer on an individual camp stove than a big grill. And so I went ahead and allotted that. So far I'm up to $797, then $300, and then $140. That all gives up $1,237. I didn't put in like cast iron or tea kettle. I'm assuming your house already has that in suburbia. And if it doesn't, go to Goodwill and maybe you can get something old deep pot or something like that for on the cheap to stay in our budget. So there's a food category. Ben, do you have any pushback or anything you'd do different now that you've heard me say the food thing? I know you're you're inching into this world of preparation. And
well, one of the things that stands out to me as interesting is that you are making a point that if all your cooking stuff is electricity based, you need to consider having a different method, especially to boil water, because even if you get meals ready to eat or My Patriot Supply, those require boiled water to be made into the meal. And so you need a way to boil water.
Right.
And you can't depend on electricity. So if you have zero methods to boil water, apart from electricity, you're going to be up a creek in a lot of ways. That's an interesting predicament.
That's right. And a lot of the, you know, pots and pans that are used in suburbia, they're these nonstick things, and they leak metallic and all kinds of poisonous particles into the food that you're cooking. And especially if you're going to put that in a fireplace or something, you're going to immediately destroy that. And now the food is going to be contaminated with the breakdown of that inferior cooking piece. You want something sturdy that's not going to leach these nonstick poisonous chemicals into your food and be destroyed immediately. Plastic handle? Nope. You can't use anything like that. Yeah. Not over open flame.
So cast iron is a powerful tool. I mean, if you don't have any cast iron, I mean, at least having a skillet, one large skillet, boy, that sounds like a great idea.
At our household a couple years back, we threw away all that stuff, or I think we put it in like camping supplies. It's never used, but it's there. Other stuff we threw away, and we went cast iron for everything. So all of our stuff, every pot, every pan we cook with is cast iron now.
I didn't know that.
It's never wearing out. And if you learn how to take care of it and clean it, not a big deal at all. All right, so that right there is the food section. Water, I chose to go with a Berkey. You can get one of their smaller ones for like $400. I don't think that even includes much in the way of the actual filters. And if you want to do fluoride filters, now you're going to bump it way up. You can get the knockoffs. This is also on My Patriot Supply. They have like a knockoff version of it. I haven't tried it, but here we are trying to make a budget. Being able to filter water is a real big deal. And so now you could go anywhere and you could presumably filter any water you can find just about through that Berkey filter, and it's going to take everything out of there almost. If it has small bacteria in it, well, you could do like a UV light, or you can boil the water as well. That takes a good bit of energy and time, but if you feel like your water has been contaminated with that, whatever the Berkey can't filter outright, you can do with just boiling the water. An additional thing, so Berkey water filter or a knockoff version with filters, I just put an allotment of $400, tried to make it work somewhere in there, and then purification tablets was another $10. So I'm all in for water at $410. So we've done food, water, and now shelter. Shelter.
Real quick.
Yeah,
real
sorry,
quick.
Go ahead, Ben.
I mean, water is a huge deal because if you're in a Black Swan event, you can't trust that the city water is going to be working. And so if you have no contingency plan for how to have water, let alone purify it, man, that's a quick way to get dead, you know? Yeah. So having clean water, I mean, that's a solid, solid prop, I think. And the Berkeys aren't small. So it seems to me, I mean, you can go up in size, but it'd be enough potable water that you could, if you fill it up, it purifies, like you have enough water to do some significant cooking and drinking with for a family of four.
Yep. And that's a good point of like, for my family, we've used Berkey for, I don't know, like 5, 6, 7 years. Even all the water that comes through our house, we just immediately fill up the Berkey. And so now it's me, my wife, my sons, we're always just drinking out of that. And so that's what we've done for the longest time. Now we have well water, and I'm installing this amazing kind of water system with UV and awesome. You know, softener and all that. Like I've gotten crazy with it, and it's not installed yet, but we got well water now, and it's I tested the well water. It's actually really, really good. So anyway, we're making our own stuff, but this isn't about me. This is about suburbia right here. So $1,237 for food. I'm $410 for water. Now shelter, you're living in your shelter. You have a home. Even if you had to get in your car is now shelter. It keeps you away from the wind and rain, the elements. What's not in mind here is we're just going out into the woods and all we have is the clothes on our back and we got to make a tent or we got to make a lean-to or something like that. I don't see any reason to do that. I've got my home. I've got my vehicle, which is a mobile shelter. And if I'm leaving those things, it's to find a different shelter. If one of these terrible events happen, you're going to have a lot of death. There'll be plenty of homes ready for squatters.
Man, that's hardcore, but that's unavoidable.
It's true. And people freaking out, making bad decisions, will bug out as well, thinking the grass is always greener and they will go somewhere else. And the further you get in, the more homes are going to be vacant. But that depends on where you're going, right? You wonder if, all right, suburbia is failing, but then you have like mountain towns up and around. I bet everyone's going to go there and try to hunt. Everyone's going to do that. And so that's something to think about of how long will it take with nobody has any food and everyone's plan is just go in the local woods and hunt. How long will that be before all deer and turkeys are killed?
You know, you see this, I don't think that's the way it's going to pan out. I think people will run out of food and they'll look for the government to save them and then they'll just simply die.
Yeah, I think the government's awesome at that. We just saw what happened with the Hawaii fires disaster. And what did the government do? A big fat nothing. Barely anything at all. And people are just left completely displaced. And so to trust the government to take care of you, of like, it's so dumb, it's not worth responding to. If you think that the government's going to take care of you, of like, man, one is, how'd you find this channel? And how is it that you're still listening to this? Anyway, with shelters, just in case you needed a stopgap, you had to flee your structure, you take to the woods for just a little bit of time. I just put tarps. I want to go to the store and I want to get $60 of tarps. And I want sturdy, heavy-duty ones. I want eyelets built into the corners and along the seams so that you'd be able to pin that junk up and make whatever little structure you wanted. Tarps are also just really great in that, hey, it's water. It can waterproof your sleeping arrangements if you're out on the ground. It's stuff that could be used for water catchment in a pinch if you wanted to use that. Tarps are really, really wonderful for limiting exposure to the elements, whether it's sun or rain. And so it's a great idea to have tarps. You never know how you might need them, but tarps are amazing. Also, I put down tools under shelter. So that suburbia, I think, is going to have any given home is going to have a certain amount of tools. I allotted $50 to get that one tool that you really realize, I should have done that. So like, I want to make sure I've got hammers. I want to make sure I've got a bunch of nails. Maybe you got tools, but you don't have a whole treasure trove of nails. You should go out and get a ton of nails. I didn't want screws because now I need like a screw gun and that means batteries and I don't want to have to...
Good point.
Make electricity.
Good point.
And you're like, well, you could get a generator. I'm like, well, I only have $4,000 and I don't want to buy a generator if you don't already have one, or an electric generator, something like that. I'm trying to make this $4,000 budget work. And so I had to say no to a lot of good ideas to be able to be in the real confines that Big Brother has us in.
Well, yeah, that's interesting because I got a ton of screws and hardly any nails. Because I use my screw guns for everything.
Right.
And that's great while I have electricity. But if I didn't have electricity and all I had was a manual hammer, a bunch of screws. I mean, that's a lot of work to get a screw in. And nails are good.
Yep. I want to make sure every home, you have an axe and the reverse side is a sledgehammer. I think that's a great idea. Everyone should have a saw. And that you've got a saw for wood. And you've also got a saw like a hacksaw that you can cut through metal or something else. So a typical house, I think, is going to have a certain amount of tools. I put $50 to be able to plus up that home on whatever it may be missing. So, and I put that under the shelter category. Some considerations could fall under security of like, hey, how do you keep marauders from busting in windows and coming? I'm like, well, you could go to a hardware store and buy a bunch of lumber, but really in such a terrible scenario, I'm probably going to take... unnecessary furniture and things around the house. I'm like, the kids aren't going to have organized clothes anymore because I'm going to bust up the chest or drawers and I'm going to use that to board up windows and make braces for doors. And all I need to make sure I have now is hammer and nails and maybe something for a little bit of demo, but you're going to be real delicate in how you demo that so as not to damage wood. So I'm trying to think out of the box here. I was thinking, how do I collect a bunch of water? I'm like, well, I could get a bunch of barrels In my alternate plan, I added a rain barrel to the other one.
Big fan of that.
Because it doesn't have security. But here, if you fear some disaster is about to roll through, things are looking bad and fragile, immediately fill up all your bathtubs with water. And now I'm like, man, that is a ton of water. You have two bathtubs around the house and you fill those up completely with water. And then you fill up every other receptacle. You can have, that's a good bit of water for a while. And so I was trying to make even decisions there before I go out and build out rain catchment systems and all my gutters, which is a great idea, but now I may be $600 into this plan. And so again, I'm just trying to adapt a little bit of a knowledge base, because that's not really a skill. It's just fill up the bathtub. It's just some general good planning. So that's shelter with tarps and tools. I'm at $110 for that. Last piece was security. And for a home, somebody's starting to freak out a little bit. They haven't done a lot in the way of security. Security is the most important prep, in that if you don't have security, ultimately there's no way to defend your family and protect your resources. Somebody that only had the security element could go out and commandeer everyone else's resources. Without security, there's no way to keep other people from commandeering your resources and hurting your family. And so security is, it's like the Second Amendment, in that the First Amendment's got all the good stuff, but the Second Amendment is the safeguard behind all other rights. And so we have the Second Amendment as the fail-safe. That what I'm talking about in security is just localizing Second Amendment to your own emergency plan. Second Amendment is America's emergency plan. So to that end, I'm assuming this suburbia home has no guns. To get them started, I am going to send them to get an AR-15, and it's going to be a Palmetto State, one of the blemishes, and you can get that somewhere around $450, $550, somewhere in there. I want a simple red dot optic. It's, what's the least expensive one we have on our website? I think we still have the 403. If it's not the 403, it's the 503. And so a simple red dot on our website, and also a simple flashlight that mounts on there as well. With a sling, I don't know. I should be like, get your war poet sling. I'm like, a warrior poet sling is a really nice sling. I'm like, here I am pinching for pennies. And so I didn't do our Daniel Defense warrior poet rifle. I'm like, all right, I got $4,000. I'm going to spend $3,000 on the best rifle and accessories ever. I'm like, I'd love to plug my rifle. This is not a good time. Let's get really inexpensive. It works. Has a 12 MOA group, but it works. Not really. Actually, the PSAs are pretty darn good, I think, for entry level. So anyway, Palmetto State with a couple accessories. I allotted $800 for that build, and that's going to take a little bit of tinkering, and I'm probably going to make my own sling, which sucks. It's a shame to pass on our beautiful sling.
It really is, but oh well, we can't plug that.
But it's the apocalypse. You got to make sacrifices. We're out of business anyway. Nobody's shopping our website. All right, the other thing is I wanted to make sure we had another gun, and I wanted it to be handgun. And at first I was thinking just a Glock 19, big enough to fight with, but it's also small enough to conceal. But I thought, no, maybe I've got the AR and my wife, who's doing other duties, she's got the pistol. And so I went for a Glock 48. So
interesting.
Glock 48 was my choice for a sidearm. That'll be pawn shop, maybe $450, I'm hoping. Then I went to ammo, and if I get 1,000 9mm and 1,000 5.56, currently as of our price check today, we come out a little under $900 for both. I got $893 for that. So there's ammo.
With the ammo that you're purchasing, should magazines be purchased to load it all up?
Glock 48 is going to come with a few extra mags. The AR-15 is probably only going to come with one. I'll need to buy a few $10, $12 P mags as well. And so that'll just kind of be in the accessories. I got to shop a real good deal or something. But I want, you know, three-ish spare additional mags loaded up, ready to go. The last piece of the security element was I put $100 for medical, and this will include boo-boo stuff. This is just some simple drugs of like anti-diarrheal medication. That's a really, really good idea right there. Excedrin, Advil.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most scariest, parts of this thought experiment is what could happen medically, you know, with the system going down. To not have anything on hand, that's actually a pretty terrifying thought.
Sure.
or if you suffer a shot, gunshot wound, man, that's really intense stuff. Tourniquets, are those worth, if you don't, most people don't have tourniquets on hand. Is that worth adding to this or no?
Man, I really like medical. I put $100 because you're going to be able to have some boo-boo stuff like we just listed, of Band-Aids and a thermometer kind of stuff. It's in that category. But then you can also have something in there for emergency medical. So you got a $100 allotment there. That may be a tourniquet, but a tourniquet's like $34.
And you could fashion
that's a good
tourniquet.
Bit. You can create a tourniquet. It's just not going to be nearly as good. And now it requires you to have even more medical skill.
Yeah.
So if like, man, I can get just a bandana and a stick and I've got a tourniquet.
Yeah. Learn how to use your axes and knives before then so you don't accidentally cut yourself like an idiot.
Right. So whatever you want to do, $100 in the medical area so you can be able to do that. I'd love to be able to get some antibiotics and stuff ending in cillin, but you never know.
No, that's like hundreds of dollars.
I've got surgery tools. I have an AED.
Yeah,
I have surgery tools and a defibrillator. I've got multiple different kinds of antibiotics. I've got all kinds of crazy stuff that I've just been amassing little by little over the years. I'm like, hey, I got a buddy that's a surgeon. And I'm like, yeah, I'd love to have some surgery stuff. Yeah. He's like, do you know how to do surgery stuff? And I'm like, yes. I'll figure it out, man. I'll just Dexter my way forward.
John, that's not a great thing to figure out.
I just thought of like, I'll have it. Then maybe if we absorb a doctor into our homestead plan, I'm like, hey, I got some stuff for you. You can cut on people with this.
So, I mean, I'd much rather be like that than Ben. I'm going to have to ask you to be an experiment for me. And I'm like, no.
I'm good with it.
Oh, awesome.
So let me total up this category for security, a whopping $2,243. It hurts to have not already had an allotment of security stuff. So if I broke this up as a pie chart, I did 31% on food, 10% of my $4,000 went to water, 3% went to shelter, and 56% went to security. Now, let's do it in case you already have a couple guns. And many of you guys watching, I'm like, bro, I got more than a couple. And I'm like, I bet you do, you stud. I love it. So maybe you got a whole bunch of guns and you got a whole bunch of ammo. Well, you don't have to worry about that category, which is sucking all of my budget down the tube. So let's imagine that you are, we hate to say it, but we will call it good enough for the apocalypse so that you can allocate your $4,000 to other resources.
High five. I feel good for those guys.
Yeah, man. You're one of those guys. So good job.
This is a real smile.
So now I have recalibrated. Now, instead of doing 1 3-month supply of food, I'm going to do 2 3-months of supply. That brings my total to $1,594. Now, keep in mind, and I didn't say this before, a 3-month food supply is for one person. And so if you got 3 people in your family, a 1-month food supply actually isn't going to take you that month. If you have a 3-month food supply for one, well, that's a 1-month food supply for 3. If you got 2 kids and 2 adults, well, factor in of like, oh, that's going to be about 2 kids equal one grown man, perhaps, with food intake. And so this will get me 2 months for my family. Another thing I did, instead of $300 for my grocery run, I went ahead and gave myself another $200, and so that bumped me up to $500. I allotted $50 to buy something better for cooking, like something cast iron, a Dutch oven, something that could kind of do everything. Then I added under the water section a rain barrel, something that I could take all my gutters and funnel them toward a rain catchment barrel. Then with tools, instead of a $50 budget, I added another $100, and so $150 there. And then I ditched an AR-15 and the pistol because I already have some guns and ammo. Now this has dramatically changed my pie chart. My food is now 55% of that budget. My water is 16%. I kept the ammo because yay for ammo. And that's 24%. And really, if you got a bunch of ammo, you could drop that. And if I did take that down, I'm really going to throw it straight toward food. Food is going to be the most difficult thing. If you have a way to purify water, whatever source you can kind of find around you, you have a way to make water, you have some shelter, you have some general security, food is going to be the long-term scarce resource. You need food, and you know where
John,
it's coming from.
I got to ask you a question on that, because while I do not disagree with you that food is the most important thing, food and water, one of the things that's conspicuously absent is you have mentioned at no point any sort of power backup, any sort of portable power station. And so when you went in this segment and your resources have been freed up, I was almost certain that you were going to say you were going to pick up some sort of like Jackery little power brick thing that you could power rechargeable batteries off of it, but you didn't. Why in the world did you not add power to this?
I think if you were 2 months in, you would immediately trade an $800 solar generator for a 1 month supply of food, or a 3 month supply of food. So I list that energy you view as essential. It's not essential. You can make it without it, but you cannot make it without food.
That is true.
And so you're thinking about, I need to power. What do you need to power? I'm going to power my laptop and my music and stuff. And then your daughter is starving months in.
Well, but walkie-talkies, communication.
Well, who do you need to talk to? You got your family with you and you're screwed and you're not going anywhere. Who are you talking to, really?
Hey, well, the family unit, if you have to do.
Why are you leaving your family?
You would not want to, but if you had to.
Why would you have, give me a scenario where we're in a bug-in scenario,
easy.
Crap hit the fan, and now I need to communicate with my bride on an open channel walkie-talkie.
All right,
which now
me.
Admits that there are people around, you know, if like you have no idea who's listening, but
it's a good counter.
Remember,
for not doing the
walkie-talkie. I am not opposed to comms. I have comms. It's just if I haven't done much preparation and I don't have a lot of food and water and I'm all basics, I've got a lot of other stuff I would rather allocate resources to before I get to comms. I mean, I'm going to get to night vision eventually. Once you have a bunch of stuff, we're going to continue to get more and more. I want you to have 500 sandbags on hand and a shovel so you can build fighting positions around your place, like all kinds of crazy
yes,
stuff.
Yes, because my house is not bulletproof. That is true, actually.
Let's get nutty. Let's get crazy with it, but comms are going to be way down the list.
Hey, here you go. How about this?
I want to keep riffing on comms for a moment because I think some folks are going to be.
Let me ask you this then. Let's say you have a kindred spirit five houses down the road in your subdivision. This is a neighbor that you and him, you're both war poets, and walkie-talkie could be the communication link that keeps you and him in the know with what's going on in your area, thus broadening your area of sight in a way.
If they're really a kindred spirit and we're in this terrible catastrophic event, we should choose one house and everyone lives in it together. Two houses down, you're spread out, and now everybody is pulling full-time security of like, you know, if you do more communal, now you can have the benefits of two families. So you can accomplish the same amount of security with double the personnel.
Oh, that's challenging.
And so,
that's challenging to give
and
up
now
your
you're
house.
Able to, yeah, communal living was a way that people survived for all human history up until, you know, more of the recent 100 years. It was communal living. And if you didn't have community to help share all the difficulties with survival, you would die. You would have, ultimately, your retirement plan as a man and wife is to have kids that would grow up and take care of you in your old age. It was community. That was the only hope you had. And so in the same way, that would play in. Now, be careful with kindred spirits. There's kindred spirits in a time of non-emergency. And then in a time of emergency, you may look at them completely different. Perhaps that guy down the street has no real skills. They're not a security guy. They're not a craftsman. They're not mechanics or welders or carpenters. They don't have any real survival-ish skills. Again, not a security person. And let's say they got some young kids as well. I'm like, well, you got to think about of like, all right, I need to take care of my family and I care about them and I want to help them out. But if they come in, what assets are you gaining and what liabilities are coming with them?
See, and that's why the walkie-talkies win, because now I can keep my distance from what would be probably a decrease in my survivability. Oh, but this is so tough because as a Christian, what are you supposed to do in this situation?
I mean, if they're down the street, you just open up a window and be like, hey!
John, that's like the least...
Fred! And if you can't do that, well, why not? Hey, Fred!
That's so not tactical,
you
John.
Okay. With emitting a frequency that's going to bleed over for a while longer as well. But now you have to have a schedule, a predetermined communications plan with that neighbor down the road of like, hey, during these hours, we turn on our walkie-talkie. How do you alert him that you want to talk? You're just going to leave him on all the time? In which case, how long are you going to have with those comms before you kill your batteries? And now I have to be able to do that. What would be much better is if you had some plan to communicate of like, hey, we have a distress plan. We found a whistle. If you hear two blasts of the whistle, come guns a-blazing and be able to shoot whatever marauders from the outside. So you have distress signals, whatever it is. But what I would like is to, if we're more of a localized area, I don't want my primary communications plan to be electrical devices that are difficult to power. And so,
fair enough.
And if I need them for communal living, we should be living on top of each other.
See, I think most people will avoid communal living till it is absolutely, absolutely necessary. And they will probably even miss that cue and they'll die before they do it.
Maybe so. Of like this whole plan is based on it is necessary. It's emergency living. Yeah. You know, you're bashing up furniture to bar doors. I'm imagining.
That's a bad day.
Imagining the worst thing, because if you plan for the worst thing, anything that is a lesser problem is easy to solve. If you've done the worst case planning, the lesser is really, really easy. Now, again, people are going to hear me say all that and argue against me like I'm not a fan of combo. I'm like, no. It's all right. You can have your walkie-talkies. Let's say they're $70. What are you going to trade out of my list of $4,000 for that? Are you going to trade food for those walkie-talkies? Are you going to change water purification or nails or ammo? What are you trading for those walkie-talkies out of that budget? Because it's one thing to just snootily say, Adam, but I'm like, no, the whole thing is it's a game of give and take. And so I love comms of like, I've got lots of ham radios all over the place. I've got a satellite phone.
But the more valuable resource you're saying in this situation is to have more of the stuff that people would be desperate to trade.
I think a few months in, you'll realize it's all about food. It's all about food and security. Water, once you have apparatus and ability to do that, even in a pinch, and you don't really want to do this, you just take a little drop of bleach and purify water. It's real bad for you. I'm not recommending, and I'm just saying I have done that before in a pinch of like, that's horrible. I'm like, I know. I've done a lot of other stuff that was even worse horrible. A dot of bleach is better than outright dysentery, which was what my other option was probably going to be in this context.
That also sounds like a terrible day.
little iodine drops, but those water purification tablets.
Which is why if you can get a Berkey now, get it. I mean, that's a powerful, powerful thing. We're only 2 years into our Berkey journey. And now whenever we need to drink city water, we are amazed at how terrible it tastes.
So let me circle right or back around to power. I love the idea of being able to have power. So like a solar generator, you can get one of those like $800-ish. And man, that's really cool. Now I can recharge flashlights and you can have some quality standard of living. But if I'm just basically keep trying to fight with very limited funds to have emergency resources, and it's all about survival of powering that DVD player 2 months in, you're going to realize that was stupid. I really should have just gotten more food. That's what you should be doing. But if you have some of these boxes already checked, I'd absolutely spring for a solar generator. I think that's an awesome idea. And if I had $5,000 instead of four, I'd get more food. If I had an $8,000 budget, I'd probably get more food. I'd plus up some of these other categories. I'd get some other things that aren't listed, and I'd go ahead and get the solar generator. You know, that'd be
well done.
That'd be pretty cool. So it's not that it isn't a good idea. It's just that I am weighting food, water, some general shelter stuff. The shelter category, I would love to be able to get more tools for improvement. I'd really like to improve that category, but when you're already living in your shelter, there you go. Of like being able to stockpile some type of fuel. Fuel's tough in that it just doesn't last a long time. But if you can have Fuel. I have fuel cans in my garage. I've got my own system where I'm rotating it out and using it. And the very first thing I do when I go get non-ethanol, so it's pure gas, no ethanol is in this fuel, I immediately add a fuel stabilizer that increases the longevity. So instead of it lasting just for, you know, 2-3 months, it may last for half a year or something like that if it's gas. Don't quote me on that. Everyone's got a different number. It's difficult to be able to hit that moving target because as they continue to dilute our gasoline with ethanol crap, our fuel just isn't lasting as long. Fuel used to last months, and now it's like last a month or two. Now, if you get pure gas with no ethanol, that's going to last longer, and you add an additive to it, it's going to last a good bit longer. But that's something that it's not in here at all. And if all of a sudden... Fuel stations fail. You'll need to be able to get
somewhere. You're bugging in, though. You're not going anywhere.
That's right. But you want the option to be able to go somewhere. But
some guys might be wondering. They might see a gap in what you've said. As you've given no money for defensive measures, I'm talking body armor or a helmet.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on a simple plate carrier with some plates in it? What do you think on that?
Well, I love it, but if I'm really bugging in... I'm battening down the hatches. My body armor is my home.
Yeah.
It's just a huge exoskeleton. So being able to reinforce fighting points, and that's why I mentioned like sandbags and stuff, or being able to put other kinds of wood obstructions. You've got like a brick exterior. I'm like, oh, you're golden. You're good to go on this. And now you're able to open a window, shoot out, you get real low, kind of junkyard prone through a windowsill. That is your body armor. I'm not looking to go expeditionary and marauding when I'm just hunkering down for a couple weeks or a month or 2 months. Yeah. All of our resources are in, and every time you leave, you risk dying. And if you die, what happens to your family? Who's going to protect them? And so going out and looking for resources presents a really, really big security concern. I would want a fire team to be able to go out with me if I was going expeditionary looking for resources. Gotcha. It is incredibly dangerous. You leave your family unattended, and there's always the option that you get nabbed or your comings and goings draws attention to where you actually came from. You're wearing body armor and you're all kitted out. Well, you look like a good target. I'd like to keep your stuff. And somebody just around the corner, careful aim, pop, you never even saw them coming, and now they take your crap. And so I love the idea of body armor and helmets and night vision and the whole kit. But on a $4,000 budget,
that's a no-go.
It's a no-go for me. I'm really wanting to hunker down. I'm not assaulting other, you know, stuff. If I had no moral compass, my list would look completely different. Instead, I would focus on stuff like I'm going to have body armor. I'm going to have emergency trauma. I'm going to have some real good rounds and guns, and I'm going to get basically my full kit because my idea now is to prey on people that are more prepared than I am. And so now I can just go
less defended
and take their stuff. And so I protect my body so that I'm able to pillage and plunder, so to speak. And that's a guy without a moral compass who's got the skill of knowing how to take land and take buildings. Now that's still, even if you know what you're doing, extremely risky. But you can go about it a smart way. Right. You're not like doing a one-man SWAT team thing. You watch it. You follow the criminal planning saga. You're going to watch a house for a little while, find out what's an easy target, find out who the own security people are when they're a place of vulnerable, they're outside, and they're fiddling with a garden hose or something. You just take them out and immediately breach the structure. Then you own it in the chaos in that moment. And so anyway, you'd be able to do... that would be a good one-man marauding, but ultimately I want to band with other folks to be able to do hood rat stuff. Body armor matters a lot.
But in this situation where you're not, it's not...
It's a give and take, man. I'd love to say body armor. And I'd love to be like, hey, body armor, shop Warrior Poet Society and buy body armor from us. I'd love to do that. But again, I'm trying to be real to the scenario of why would I be out, you know, going expeditionary.
Yep.
And if I was getting body armor, I'd absolutely want radios because now I need comms with the structure that I left and the structure I'm going to. Link up procedures becomes a bigger deal. And so comms becomes far more of a critical piece of kit. But in a bug in, I don't need comms. I'm not going anywhere.
You know, it's just interesting because I really think at some point, though, at some point, you're going to be forced with a need to go out. I think that's unavoidable.
I agree.
At some point, you will need to go outside of the home.
But this is a game of time. I'm playing a time game. My goal here is to have sufficient resources to bug in and not need to go out as soon as I might have. So that when you go out, it's much farther in the future. And if it's the months are dragging on, most of America has died.
That's hardcore yet again, but that's probably an accurate theme because we saw Hurricane Katrina within 3 days. Everything started crumbling there after the
society would absolutely tear itself to pieces.
So the further out you're saying that you can go without making those risks, regrettably, hopefully more people have expended their energy, effort, and have died, and it's less dense.
Yeah. Once you have these resources, as we're casting, the biggest security risk is you leaving. You're going out and doing something. You're leaving your family vulnerable. It's working around the house anywhere of like, man, be hunkered in low light signature, low noise signature. I don't need a lot of power because I'm going to sleep and waking with the sun like they have for all human history before electricity. It's a need, not a want. When you're like, we need power, of like people panic of like, what happens when my phone dies? I'm like, let it die. Let it die. It's all right. Just immediately turn it off.
This is the very sticky part of this because I know a lot of our listeners are going to be interested in, at what point does the Christian ethic kick in survivability and generosity? And when you are looking to add extra resources, are any of those added as a boon for someone who has not prepared but is deserving of it? What in the world? How would you cross that bridge?
If you're a Christian, the Christian ethic never kicks off or on, even in an emergency dire situation. However, you have certain verses that give you some general handles in which you can grab onto. There were different times throughout the Bible where there were famines, and God had, like for instance, Joseph in the Old Testament was number two in the land of Egypt, and he filled their silos waiting for this big plague and famine to come up. And it was through that all of Israel and that nation in Egypt itself was preserved throughout that famine. And so what you saw was food preps. You saw a early prepping going on. Noah was also a good prepper.
Yeah, they thought he was really crazy until it started raining.
Yeah, and if it hadn't started raining, he would have been crazy.
He's
a crazy man until it goes. 1 Timothy says, those who do not take care of the needs of their own family have denied the faith and are worse than an unbeliever. And so you have a very limited amount of resources. You have the people that God has entrusted you first and foremost to protect. That's your own family. And if in your generosity, you give those limited resources away, so now you watch your little kids starve in front of you over the next couple weeks, well, you have done the worst of the two things. You can be generous based on your means. So the idea is we can be blessed to be a blessing. And so we want to do that, but we take care of the needs of those who God has appointed us to be providers over.
Yes.
And so you can only do what you can do. You cannot feed the world when you cannot even feed yourself. And so the answer, it isn't just no from a standpoint of I'm not generous or charitable. It's I literally do not have the means. I'm not able to do that. I cannot conjure it up. And so here's very, very limited resources. Now, I want to be able to push those resources as much as I can to be able to protect and provide for my immediately family. And I want to be so good and shrewd in these times that I have resources to be able to bring even more in. And so that's the goal. And so it is a notion of Christian charity to be able to be shrewd in that way so that we can provide for more and more and more and more people. And that's just productivity of a man who is counted as a good steward.
So you just can't shoot everyone in the face.
Yep, you can't do that.
Okay, gotcha.
Can't
gotcha.
Do that.
So they walk up, you just, okay, gotcha.
So I want to be generous. I want Christian charity. And I want to make sure that I'm providing for the needs of my own household. God asked me, he entrusted my family to me. If I don't take care of their needs, I'm worse than an unbeliever, the Bible says. And so, man, I'm supposed to bring my family into that. And if I only have resources for my family versus whoever else is around me, they're supposed to go to my family. If I have more resources, I'm going to bring in more family of faith, and I'm going to be in more of a community. And then if I have even more resources, absolutely, I'm going to keep giving and I'm going to keep helping as much as I can. And maybe it's not physical assets. Maybe if you're somebody's in desperate need, maybe it was a knowledge share. Maybe it was a skill. Maybe it was an information that could be life-saving, even though we don't have the actual physical assets of, like, we just don't have them. We don't hold them, so we cannot give them. It's not that we just are snooty and like, I have no desire to because I'm hateful now that I'm scared. I'm like, no, it doesn't exist. I do not have the resources to feed everyone who didn't plan.
Yeah.
And so that's upsetting, but that's just the nature of it. That's where it is. And so what I don't want to do is make sure I've hoarded everything. I've got plenty of abundance, but I'm not helping anyone else. Well, I'm like, well, no, you suck, bro. You suck. You should be helping. Mm-hmm. What are your resources? Whatever resources you have, you should be using those resources to somehow figure out replenishable resources. And so—
a good word.
Yeah, you got to be able to figure that out. And that requires being shrewd now so that you can be loving later. So that's what we're doing here. I would like to be able to be shrewd right now and prepared right now so that I'm able to, first off, protect my family, and then family of faith and community, and that circle gets a little bit bigger. And then I would like to be able to be successful enough about that we can help even more people.
And the story of Joseph is really kind of great in that regard, because Egypt just does not hoard all of its storage.
Well, they do. They sell it and just absorb the surrounding world's wealth. And that was part of how Egypt got hooked up with cold hard cash.
They did.
Everyone was starving and they charged a healthy profit. They're the only food in town. People traveled from other countries to them. And so amazing amounts of Egyptian wealth came during that time. But those nations got to stay alive because of one man, the Lord's servant, Joseph.
Right, and you just kind of hit on a good point because they had what everyone needed, and they traded it for money. And it's funny because before the show, before cameras rolling, I said to you, hey, why in the world have you not stacked silver and gold? Why is there no silver and gold in your—
Yeah.
and then you gave me a really hard time.
Well, I think cash on hand of, like, it isn't on this list, but I think having some simple cash on hand, and there's always the idea of, like, well, perhaps that cash has become useless, but gold and silver, they have value. I'm like, yes, that is true because we assign it value. However, all right, you have a gold coin, a bullion, 1 ounce, it's worth somewhere around $2,000, and you want to buy a loaf of bread. How does that work?
Well, I think it works. You give me all your bread, because $2,000 is a lot of money.
Man, that's a lot of bread. It will go bad long before you're able to eat even a tenth of that bread.
Man, I love those carbs. Don't underestimate me.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm just saying, gold and even silver is not a resource that in America anyone has any concept of its value. And so for them to all of a sudden, they're holding on to these resources. They can feed their family with this bread, but they're going to all of a sudden start dealing in silver, which is worth, you know, X amount of dollars, but they don't really think dollars. I mean, in that immediate frenzy, they want resources. Like, if they can't eat it or drink it or shoot it, they won't care about it for a while. And really, it'd be far better barter exchange as if instead of these, like, coins, I got a $2,000 coin here, or I'll give you 10 9mm bullets. You know, I think you're one of the good guys. You're a neighbor. I trust you. You need ammo. I need bread. Give me some bread. I'll give you, here's these 10 bullets. And so ammunition becomes a far better precious metal that you can deal in, because in small units, you can divvy that out, right? And you're like, well, what if they'd use it for nefarious purposes? I'm like, well, I won't do business with people that I don't trust. And I didn't know before this left of bang or right of bang kind of event. And so that becomes something. You could do that same thing with alcohol. And so you got a bunch of real high proof alcohol and its cleansing properties, whether it's wound or sterilization of tools, and it's a disinfectant. That can be good. I mean, you can burn it, you can drink it, you can trade it. And so
even if you're not a drinker, maybe having a bottle or two on hand is not a bad idea.
Well, and it also can become something that helps purify water. In 1 Timothy 5, the Bible, like we just quoted from Timothy already in this episode, but 1 Timothy 5 says, don't just drink water alone, but add a little wine for the sake of your stomach. And the idea is before the prohibition era of the 1900s, before that, human history wouldn't have survived without alcohol. You got to spike the water to be able to dilute it, especially on these long ship voyages and stuff. You don't have alcohol, everyone's going to die. It's why the pilgrims stopped at Plymouth Rock. They ran out of beer. They didn't have anything to spike the water with. And you're going to all die of dysentery, of just sitting water without alcohol to help dilute it. Anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but I'm just saying alcohol has a few good life-saving properties to it.
All right, more so than silver and gold.
Yeah. Now, if you're an alcoholic, you shouldn't do that. And then the apocalypse kicks off. You're super bored and depressed. And you just drink yourself into oblivion. I'm like, yeah, you probably should have just gotten some bullets, not tequila. It's a big hard pass on that. I'm just
limits.
In bringing up alcohol, I'm just mentioning, man, I can think of a whole bunch of stuff that would be a far better barter item than gold and silver, because our society it's not a society that trades precious metals. People don't. Your neighbor down the street doesn't really see that value in ready tradability of it. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't have it. I'm just saying the stuff that's on my list is more important than gold and silver. If you've done everything else and then still some stuff, go ahead and get some gold and silver. I have gold and silver. I already have it. So I'm not against it. Don't do the walkie-talkie thing to me. I'm for it all, but I'm for other stuff first and more so. All right. Well, this has been I hope this has been helpful for you. In fact, I know it has. This has been helpful for me to deliver. I'm pretty far down the road in preparation stuff, and it's because I've been thinking about it and doing it for many years. So I'm not a new kid on the block when it comes to this. I'm actually in the self-sufficient homestead off-grid camp now. And so, like, none of this is on my list now. I've gone wildly down the rabbit hole on all this. Guys, we got a bunch more in this episode, our Q&A ambush. We also have some hot topics. And so make sure that you pop over to watchwpsn.com to check out the rest of this show. You'll also get all of our other shows and our training classes. We appreciate the support. That's watchwpsn.com. After you sign up, you're able to download the app. And so you guys listening in on podcasts, appreciate you. And we'll see you next time.